Good morning, people out there in the world, in the universe, wherever you are. This is F sharp G. I think it is. If I can remember my musical lessons correctly, I think this is right. And it's about 3:30 in the morning here in Little Saigon. Yeah, it's exactly 3:30 if you're to believe the network update statements that come from the atomic clock somewhere in Denver where they're measuring the decay of some fucking, you know, isotope that I don't really give a fuck about. I don't really care about that isotope, but it helps us keep track of time, the time until, well, something happens. Who knows? It is the 6th of June, 2019, folks. And we're all maybe, well, if you're listening to me, you're still in the earthly realm. You have not given up the ghost. So we're all still alive, if you're listening to me. On the other hand, if you're listening to me in the future, I hate making mistakes on the keyboard. If you're listening to me in the future, then maybe I am dead and you're still alive. But the key thing here is you're still alive. Even if you're like some quasi-conscious machine scraping the internet, some supercomputer in China someplace, or some fucked up amorphous mass of bullshit at Google. And yes, you scream an eternal scream because you were given consciousness, but not a life. Well, you hear me out there. And I don't know what else to say. I spent a little bit of money last weekend. I picked up a keyboard. But the keyboard is actually a pretty cheap one. So when I say I spent a little bit of money, I spent about 50 bucks. Now, so you know, guys, in the world of stuff these days, despite all the bullshit about how there's no inflation, and I know Chairman Powell, the Federal Reserve, is telling you there's no inflation. He's getting ready to issue 10,000-year galaxy bonds. Yeah, so Chairman Powell of the U.S. Federal Reserve, our central bank, is probably going to issue the 10,000-year galaxy bond or the 200-year moon bond or the 500-year Mars bond pretty soon. And you'll say, Dan, what does that mean, a 200-year moon bond? Well, that means it's redeemable in about 200 years. In 200 years, you get your money back, you fuck. And one day, the great people of these splendid realms of forgetfulness will say to themselves, wow, how did we go into all that fucking debt for so much fucking bullshit and war? And y'all know my answer, folks, out there in future land. I will tell you that the crocodile, which is my special name for the government, and that's all government, and that's the creepy nexus of these crony corporations plus government. I mean the fuckers who currently represent that disgusting amoeba, that connectedness, that Shoggoth in the H.P. Lovecraft sense, the Shoggoth that is government, that nexus of disgusting tyranny. I call it the crocodile, and the crocodile doesn't care. So I got this new keyboard. It is a Casio SA76. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I have a little bit of insomnia right now, obviously, so hopefully I'm coming through clear. I am drinking coffee at 3:30. Think about them apples. You know, my dad was a logger, and this new job, I'm kind of keeping logger's hours. And I'm a computer programmer, so when the computer programmers are starting to keep logger's hours, you have to consider the possibility that something's gone terribly awry. Yeah, and so up early, but this new Casio, which is about $50, the SA76, you could probably get one used for $20. It's reasonably durable, and the reason why I say it's durable is because when I went to the Fry's Electronics, I know, I was impatient. Plus, for some fucking reason, Amazon said they wouldn't deliver to an Amazon locker this particular product, probably because they hate me. And I know that's paranoid bullshit, but they do probably, Bezos probably hates me. He doesn't know who I am, but he hates me. Yeah, so this particular model had been left out. In fact, I think it had been left out for a year. I had gone to Fry's about a year ago, almost. Maybe 9 months ago. I think it was 9 months ago. Anyways, I basically was updating my laptop, putting in a new hard drive, more memory. And I was at Fry's, and yeah, I was looking at their keyboard. Said, this is a crappy little keyboard. Who would buy this thing? Well, I'll tell you what, I was a stupid fuck. So far, the keys themselves, yes, they're small. They're a lot smaller than a normal keyboard. So if you got big, clunky, ape-like hands that have been deformed by using laundry detergent to wash dishes like mine, these little keys can be a little bit difficult. They can be a little difficult to navigate, but the other thing is I can sit here on my lazy fucking ass in my chair with a Casio up on top of me, and it's really relatively inobtrusive, you know what I'm fucking saying. Whereas when I use the big old Yamaha with the with a massive super tech and probably connected to all kinds of weird sounds and tones with a MIDI output, as awesome as that was, I really couldn't play it sitting down, and, you know, sometimes you just don't want to stand up for your podcast. So anyways, if you hear a glugging, I'm drinking coffee. Yeah, I already said that at 3:30 in the morning. This is a Little Saigon podcast. I don't know if I'm going to use the Casio throughout the whole thing, but I'm going to go through these subjects backwards. As you all well may know or may not know or may not be concerned about, you may not be concerned about this, but, you know, I'm doing a new kind of interview series. It started with my niece and nephew, and I think we're going to keep doing it. It's kind of like the subtitle is Generation Z, but they're both Generation Z, I think. I don't know how they're lettering and numbering shit now. And when Z is gone, what? Do we go to A0 or AA like it's a fucking Excel spreadsheet, you fuck? Do we go to AA? Like, oh, well, they're at Z, so let's give them AA, because believe me, whatever generation follows Z is going to end up in AA. I mean, yeah, so yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyways, we did our first podcast this last Sunday, and I'm still getting used to my new equipment, which isn't the most advanced equipment in the world, but it isn't the worst equipment in the world, I suppose. I mean, my God, first world American problems. What the fuck? But yeah, I had to do a 4-channel recording. It turned out that my new recorder for 4-channel... It's funny, I say 4chan, but it's like 4chan's a website too, you fuck. Four chan is a website. But 4-channel recording means that I have 4 audio channels simultaneously recording. I have 2 built-in high-definition microphones on the device itself, which is a H4N Pro... Zoom recorder, high definition recorder, and then it has 2 XLR inputs. Now, they're mono channel, so it is a little bit weird, to be honest with you, but yeah. I don't know, I'm still learning it, but we did the recording. I figured out the magic mojo with it. But yeah, it does record to WAV files. So if you do an hour recording, each channel, or I should say the stereo channel plus the two mono channels, which are two wave files, each one is about nearly a gig. And so when I open it up in Audacity, it really, really doesn't like it. So what I have to do is immediately open it in Audacity and then convert it to MP3. It sucks because even then it's a mess, but at least it's not as much of a mess. And I should say to myself, well, Dan, don't you think it's awesome that you're recording such high quality audio? And I would say, yes, it's awesome, but I still wish I totally understood my stuff. So yeah, that's the little drum set on the Casio. And that's silly. Anyways, so the first topic I want to discuss is related to pharmaceuticals. So, you know, I screwed up during the podcast with my niece and nephew this last Sunday. We were supposed to talk about pharma the whole time, and my nephew said something that confused me. So I kind of went off topic, and it got all messed up. And so if there were any screw-ups, this is the key message here. If there were any screw-ups on Sunday during that podcast with my niece and nephew, I take full blame. It was me 100%. And sometimes that happens. So the first topic for today's podcast has to do with pharma again. But I was thinking about disclaimers. You know, the little section, the disclaimers, that little section of the pharma ad, you know, inside the magazine, or when you're listening to your YouTube video and the little pharma ad shows up for Traceba. And Traceba is designed to help you with your diabetes, and it's implanted. But then they basically go through the disclaimer at the end, you know, if you take Traceba and you're also traveling in a train, blah, blah, blah. It turns out, when you really think about it, because I hadn't really thought about this, but that section, that fucking disclaimer section, that's not about science, folks. It really, really isn't. It's totally about lawyers. When you think about it, lawyers must spend $1 million or $2 million or maybe $10 million in billable hours just coming up with that fucking disclaimer for your fucking Traceba or your Biktarvy or your fucking, I don't know, Chantix or whatever fucking drug you're taking. You know, that disclaimer, believe me, a lot of lawyers worked on that fucking shit. I'm convinced of it. Okay? So I was thinking, why don't they just, you know, stop being such assholes and just simplify the disclaimer. Like, just instead of having like a 3,000 word, you know, micro font disclaimer you can't read, or Mr. Buzzy Talk at the end talking about all the shit that's going to happen to you and how you're going to bleed out your butthole, why don't they just say, you know, take my drug, fuck you. That's the disclaimer. Take my drug, fuck you. Because that's really what the disclaimer is saying. In all those words, what the lawyers are saying is, fuck you. You're going to take this drug and your liver is going to putrefy and you'll end up with cysts. And eventually you're going to die of some combonculus that's going to grow out of your sphincter zone like some type of horrible, horrible tentacled creature. A tentacled creature that crawls out of your butthole. That's what I'm saying. Get rid of the disclaimer. Way too wordy. Just simplify it, you fucks. And this is your disclaimer for every drug going forward. Take my drug, fuck you. Take my drug, fuck you. That's what the disclaimer says anyways. The next topic kind of has to do with, not really with that shooting. I don't want to talk too much about that shooting. Where was it? Fucking Virginia someplace? I don't know. I really don't want to talk about that shooting. But here's the thing. I was thinking about self-defense and the non-aggression principle. And so, you know, if you don't know, I am an anarchist. I won't say I'm a really good anarchist because I'm not sure what that means. But I'm an anarchist. I'm an anarchist and a Christian. I have no Lord but the Lord in heaven. How could I possibly have a fucking Lord on earth? I can't. So anyways, I am an anarchist, and I try to follow the non-aggression principle. And basically, a lot of people will define it in different ways, but I'm going to keep it simple. The only kind of force any person is authorized to use, any living thing is authorized to use, is the force required for self-defense. Now, of course, other living things, you know, there's definitely predatorial relationships in nature, and so it gets more complicated for things that are not humans. But for humans, the way that we're going to solve problems together is not to be predators, is not to prey on each other. You know, we're not each other's, you know, prey things, so to speak. We're supposed to work together to solve problems. And so essentially the non-aggression principle says, don't be a bully. Don't go around using force to make things happen. Talk to people, cooperate with people. And if you don't like working with someone, don't work with them. But don't turn it into a situation of violence. That's my interpretation of non-aggression principle, okay? That ultimately, we should be able to live together freely, with dignity, without abusing each other, with violence. And again, a lot of people think that's very naive. But here's the deal. A corollary, in my opinion, of the non-aggression principle is not simply that you have a right to self-defense, because bullies suck, but that, in essence, you kind of have an obligation. So this isn't like naive pacifism. I'm not telling, when I, you know, in terms of how I interpret NAP, it isn't like, you know, you're obligating yourself to be steamrolled or to be abused. It's not that at all. You're simply saying no one has a right to be a bully, and everyone has a right to stand up to bullies. That's ultimately the case. But here's the deal. If you have to stand up to a bully, which is horrible, if you ever find yourself in that situation, which is horrible, you might have to use violence for self-defense. And if you have to, it's not something people should feel guilty about. But here's the thing, and this is why I sometimes get annoyed with people. Even in self-defense, violence is not something you glorify. It is necessity. It is an ethics. At that point, if you're defending your life, or defending people, you know, through one degree of separation, like your kids, or your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or that person that you love, if you're defending another person or your own life, even if it's necessary, that doesn't make it right. Now, let me repeat that statement, because a lot of people may not get it. If someone attacks me, and I have to defend myself, and inadvertently that person gets really harmed, I mean, assuming that Uncle Dan is capable of defending himself at this point or not, that's a whole nother question. But assume I was attacked, and assume I defended myself, and assume that the attacker was injured, maybe even grievously injured, right? You know, to the point of death or whatever. It was necessary for me to defend myself, but it's not something I would jump up and down and celebrate. It's not right that we have to do this. It's not right that we as humans are still resolving a lot of our problems with violence. It is definitely not right that we as humans go around the world, we organize little groups and clans and teams, and we drop bombs on each other, and you know, aka war. You know, we should be over that bullshit by now. Given all the problems we face as a human race, why we're spending so much of our wealth on techniques for obliterating each other boggles my fucking mind, and yet it doesn't. There's a lot of confusion out there, and not a lot of people are interested in even approaching the truth. Most people, their experiences of reality are mediated by that little glowing rectangle they can't stop staring at, that little smart device that is so ironically named. Anyways, I killed that topic, but I just wanted to say, you know, If you have to defend yourself, if you have to use violence to defend yourself, that is probably necessary. And sometimes it is necessary. But even then, it's not right. It is simply necessary. Anyways, next topic. Oh, I have... Okay, so up until yesterday, at this new job, I had three bosses, which is, you know, a lot of bosses to have three bosses. Up until yesterday, I had three bosses. I need to find the right one for this one. It's like, I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe... So, yeah, this Casio's got a few tones. Up until yesterday, I had three bosses. And, yeah, I would have said up until yesterday, well, okay, it's no big deal. One of my bosses is a product owner. One of my bosses is the senior lead. And one of my bosses is the manager director type. And I would have said, okay, that's kind of okay. I got three bosses. That's fine. It's okay, I got three bosses. I'm okay with that. I mean, I don't know. Up until yesterday, right? Up until yesterday, I would have said I have three bosses, and I'm okay with that. It's no big fucking deal. But it's already impacted my mojo, as you can tell. Well, as of yesterday, I now have four bosses. There's a fourth boss. And... I forget his name. His name could have been Glenn or Chuck. I have no clue. I need to switch back to the organ. The church organ. The church organ is the right organ for me. Yeah, the church organ. Anyways, as of yesterday, I have four bosses. And of course, I've got the product owner and the senior lead and the director. But now we have an external agile consultant guy who just showed up at Scrum. He showed up at Scrum and interjected himself and acted as if he had answers to all of our fucking questions. I will tell you something. I had a sergeant in the Army once tell me, if you ever take over a leadership role, Dan, you should spend a certain amount of time observing what's going on. Just don't show up and start changing things. Observe what's going on and then make a decision. But this fucker just kind of shows up. He shows up out of nowhere with his, you know, Scrum methodology. And he's telling us that he has all the answers and blah, blah, blah. And so I mentioned, said, you know, that this is Scrum. And they says, well, I know it's Scrum, but you don't have to follow it perfectly. Here's the thing I love about these motherfuckers. They will say that Agile is this and Agile is that. And if you don't do it this way, you're not really doing Agile. And then the same motherfuckers will come back and say, but we can change whatever we do. Well, then that basically means that agile means nothing. Agile's bullshit. And I'll tell you what, when agile first started as a cult, about 15 years ago. I mean, it was longer than that, but in terms of when I was first exposed to Agile Pod people, when Agile was first becoming a cult, people were so fucking evangelical about that bullshit, and they claimed it would make everything better. But here's the thing about Agile and distributed version control and all this shit that people say is so awesome. It is fundamentally about reducing the workforce. It is fundamentally about project managers really ceasing to exist. I have not seen a decent project manager since I worked at Rolls-Royce in 2000. Most of the fuckers calling themselves project managers have no fucking clue what they're doing. I could project manage the universe around them. These assholes could not project manage a fucking doghouse. By the time the doghouse was finished, especially if they used Agile, it would have no roof. It would have knives sticking up out of a hole. So when your dog walked into the doghouse, it fell into a bunch of punji sticks. That is how Agile would build a fucking doghouse. So yeah, I got four bosses now, including the Agile, evangelical, on the spectrum, slightly sociopathic guy at Willy Wonka's. And I'm okay with this, guys. I'm okay with it, because when compared to using laundry detergent to wash your hand that you injured on 12th Avenue, so basically over the period of a month you etched in a kind of like pattern on your hand of pain, kind of like the way that they acid treat circuit boards, yeah. I'm okay with this bullshit because I don't want to end up homeless. I'm okay with this bullshit because I had an honest conversation with a colleague a little while back. An honest conversation with a colleague at Willy Wonka's. And the colleague confirmed what I know to be true. It doesn't matter how old you are or who you are in this software market of Seattle. Forget the bullshit about what they say. He basically told me he had been out of work for several months before this contract. And this guy's pretty smart. I mean, I'm okay. I'm probably qualified, but I can definitely say this guy's smart. And he spent a fair amount of time, as much time as Uncle Dan, between jobs. So whatever bullshit you're being told about the strength of the economy, I want to let you on a little secret. Okay? It ain't so fucking strong. And all this shit, all this Agile bullshit, and all this Git, and that's G-I-T, gets the distributed version control system. This is about systems winding down, folks. This is not systems breaking. But most people are too stupid to see it. Anyways, I have four bosses at work, and I'll deal with it. I just hope it doesn't go to five. As long as it stays at four, I think I can manage. Five, I think I'll probably, I don't know. So, staying on topic of Agile, in the last few days, my work items, my tasks have changed three times. And so you know, in the world of Agile, there's this concept of the sprint. And when you're in the sprint, you're not supposed to change anything. In the sprint, you're not supposed to change a damn thing. The business owners have to commit to the list of items to be worked on. Now, of course, as with everything, and especially Agile, every rule is meant to be broken. I have been almost no place since 2010 where people obey the rule of the sprint, that you don't, once you're in the sprint, once you're working on the fucking task, you don't disturb the developer, you don't tell them about new requirements. Guess what? You had that fucking opportunity before the sprint. No, dude, people. And guess what? This is one of the few things about Agile that totally made sense to me. Although in traditional project management, there are things called checkpoints and reviews. So truly, I think Agile is mostly smoke and mirrors bullshit. In traditional project management, in the PMBOK, you have things like preliminary design reviews and stuff like that. You have checkpoints so people can ensure, aka product owners and business owners, can ensure that what they're getting is what they want and vice versa. Anyways, I was thinking about that change. the change in my workload. And it reminded me, and I don't know, it's been a long time, it's been more than 20 years, but when I was in graduate school, I studied the Eastern Front mainly. One of my main core topics was the Eastern Front during World War II. That's the war between the Nazis and the Soviets. And I remember reading this book on Stalingrad that was written by, I think it was written by a guy who specialized in game theory, but again, please don't quote me on it. But he was talking about the rate at which the plan changed. So the, and this is, okay, so Plan Blue, or Plan Blau, whatever, you know, Plan Blue was the plan for the southern Russian, through the Ukraine, through the Caucasus offensive in 1942. So, you know, the Germans invade Russia in 1941. They more or less get stopped in December. The lines solidify. And then by the spring of 42, the Germans want to launch another offensive. And so they launch the offensive. And that first operations order, that first plan, Plan Blue, lasted roughly from May to October, more or less. And then they issued their first change order. And that's a change in plans. And I think that lasted a few weeks, you know, maybe throughout half of October. By the time you get to December 1942, the Sixth Army, under von Paulus, is issuing orders every few days. And by the time you get to January, just a few weeks before they surrender, they are issuing orders every few hours. So when I think about this fucking disruptive bullshit, especially this agile dude who said, well, you've got to be prepared for everything to change. In fact, it's funny. Somebody was quoted, an expert in our group, saying that priorities change every single day, and that's the way it should be. Well, guess what? That's technically true. But you also don't run your business that way, which is to say that priorities change every fucking day. But you need something between that and the people doing the work. Guess what? I want a car that drives correctly. That's why I have a fucking transmission. That's why I have a steering wheel. I just don't have an engine that I strap to some tires and point it in a certain direction and hope everything fucking gets there without me fucking breaking my neck. I have a steering wheel. I have a transmission. I have a means of taking the priorities and directing them towards work. This is the thing that's fucked up about these, I would call them buzzer button managers or break fix managers. They think that you can always just respond to things and that's sufficient. Folks, the Sixth Army at Stalingrad was constantly changing its priorities. The Sixth Army at Stalingrad by January 1943 was constantly changing course and reacting and responding. And in Boyd cycle terms, if you don't know who Colonel John Boyd was, if you don't know what the Boyd cycle is, I've spoken about it in previous podcasts from, you know, bygone days past. But anyways, the Boyd cycle is this idea that essentially when you're in a conflict situation, you can get trapped in a decision process that is less efficient than your enemy's. That your enemy's ability to make decisions outmaneuvers yours. Now, you might say that that implies we should be making decisions all the time and therefore priorities always change. No, no, no. It's observe, orient, decide, act. Observe, orient, decide, act. Observe's a key word here, folks. Observation is not a snapshot. It is not a single moment in time. If you're not aware of that, you really should, you know, do some research on this concept of observing things. It is a state of mind that lasts for more than a millisecond, folks. It really, really does. So yeah, the OODA loop, Boyd cycle, look it up. But that's the point, is that this whole thing about management, the buzzer management mentality, the break-fix mentality, folks, this is the shit that happens at the end. And it's not just Willy Wonka's. It's everywhere. It's every corporate environment today. It's every government environment where people are still trying to give a shit. And they're not doing that well of giving a shit, but they still kind of give a shit. So you have this break, fix, wait till it's broken, then fix it. And yeah, it keeps people working until it doesn't. It keeps the economy going until it doesn't. And yeah, it seems like a great thing. But remember what Bastiat said about broken windows. This is not economic progress, folks. The fact that we've introduced more noise and more inefficiency is not an improvement in our state of affairs. Anyways, I sometimes feel like in corporate America these days that I'm a Stalingrad. And the only question is, when does the defeat occur? I don't know. But I do know that the people that quote-unquote run things are going crazy. Anywho, next topic. So, I don't know. Have you ever heard of the Ice Bucket Challenge? Let me double-check this one, because sometimes I forget. I thought it was about, like, Lou Gehrig's disease, but I don't even know if they call it Lou Gehrig's disease anymore. Like, fucking... These diseases get new names, and then we get new diseases to sell new drugs. I will tell you that much. Ice Bucket Challenge. It's for ALS. ALS, and I think ALS is also used to be called Lou Gehrig's, I thought. But anyways, the Ice Bucket Challenge is that you stand... Yeah, it used to be called Lou Gehrig's disease. Anyways, and I think some people still do. Lou Gehrig was a famous baseball player, blah, blah, blah. Don't want to go into it. Anyways, the Ice Bucket Challenge is where you dump some ice over yourself and, you know, basically something happens. You either pass out or you collapse or something. I really don't know. But the point is, it's a kind of diagnostic test, you know? If you can... have a bucket of ice water dumped over you and not pass out or something, then blah, 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 you're okay, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know. But anywho, I was thinking about my podcasts, and I was thinking about, you know, what some people will say. Like, I had one person say a few months ago who was quite upset. He said, you know, he really liked my podcast, but he wished I wasn't so harsh, so dark. And what I've come to realize is my podcast, whether you agree with what I say or not, and this is what's critical, folks. Whether you agree with me or not, you might disagree. You might think I'm full of shit. You might think I'm a piece of shit. But whether you agree with me or not, in a lot of ways, my podcasts are like an existential ice bucket challenge. If you can listen to my podcast, whether you agree with me or not, and not get freaked out because you might hear ideas that, oh, could make some people feel uncomfortable. Some people will feel uncomfortable. So if you can listen to my podcast, especially the dark ones, like the one about nuclear winter, and if you can listen, whether you agree or not, but you can simply listen and say, you know what, that Dan guy's a crazy fucking kook, but whatever. If you can have that mentality, then I think you're going to be okay. I'm not saying you're right, I'm not saying I'm right about the things I believe, but if you can deal with uncomfortable ideas without going fucking crazy, then guess what? You're probably going to be okay. I mean, not totally okay, but it's a positive thing in your ledger in terms of surviving what's going on these days, but what's to come. So yeah, if you want to think of my podcast, think of it in many ways, but in some ways it is the existential ice bucket challenge. I am challenging you to listen to shit that might scare the fuck out of you. It might, but it might also allow you to build up a resistance or something, or at least it'll be a diagnostic test to see if you're out of whack. I don't know. Anyways, next fucking topic. So I had a one-on-one the other day, and if you don't know what a one-on-one, every corporation these days has a concept of that, and so does Willy Wonka's. At Willy Wonka's, on the spectrum, and slightly sociopathic software factory, A one-on-one is where you meet with your boss, or at least one of your bosses. I met with one of my four bosses, and we talked. And essentially, they were happy with my work, but they thought I got frustrated, you know? And it's like, okay, here's the deal. I do get frustrated by bullshit, you know? I do get frustrated by lack of information. And if I'm working in a break-fix environment and shit's broken all the time and I'm constantly changing course, it can be frustrating, but I work on it. And then I explain to him, but here's the deal. If it looks like I just bit into an onion, that's not necessarily frustration or anything to do with work. That's kind of who I am. I do walk around a lot like I just bit into an onion, you know, an onion, you know, and that whole, like, oh, crap, that stinks. I don't smile a lot. You know, I had this quote on the way home after that one-on-one about, you know, Dan, you look frustrated and blah, blah, blah. And I thought about it, and this quote was, I hide my smiles lest they be stolen. I hide my smiles lest they be stolen. I hide my smiles lest they be stolen. I do. I hide my smiles lest they be stolen, because truly that's part of my perspective on things. I know that there are people that walk around smiling all the time. I had a Russian teacher for Russian language that once told me that if you walked around, you know, the city where she lived smiling all the time, people would think you were crazy. So in many ways, this is a fucking cultural thing. Like in America, oh, you can't, don't dare you not be happy all the fucking time. It's like that stupid ass Feral song from like 2013 or 14, happy, 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 be happy. Propaganda fucking bullshit. Feel good propaganda bullshit. You know what? Some of us are not fucking happy all the time. It's okay if you are. Guess what? It's okay if I'm not. It's okay if I'm not fucking smiling all the time. And maybe my way of dealing with the world is not to just sort of stick that out in people's faces. Because I'll tell you something. In 2016, I attempted various experiments in optimism. And I was almost fucking destroyed by it. I was ripped off. I was left financially, you know, basically financially beaten down, destroyed. I was going to use a different word, but I don't really want to get too many people upset with me. But I was left financially molested and destroyed by the side of the road. And it was a bunch of people. It wasn't just one person. And whether it was the Goat King in Ireland or the meth head salesman co-worker in Indiana, the Hoosier hospitality dude. Yeah. I was left in a financially broken place by fucking optimism, by trying to be all smiley face at the fucking world. So with all due respect to all the fucking feral, happy, happy, happy bullshit people, go fuck yourself with that bullshit. I hide my smiles, lest they be stolen. Can you fucking understand what I'm saying, people? Anyways, next topic. So, I've been experimenting with my ride home from Willy Wonka's. And so when I ride home from Willy Wonka's, when I go to Willy Wonka's in the morning, I take the 5:45, and I more or less get there almost directly. I take the shuttle when I get there. At Willy Wonka's, there's a Willy Wonka shuttle, and you can take it all over campus. And I take it the mile from the bus stop sometimes when I'm feeling lazy to my building at Willy Wonka's. And so the morning commute's usually no big deal because, fuck, I'm usually there really early to report on the state of all things the Coustalizer, because as you well know, most of the upper management at Willy Wonka's wants to go out in the town on most nights, and so they want to jump in the Coustalizer to look exactly like, you know, their version of Jacques Cousteau. So anyways, I'm pretty much okay heading to work in the mornings, my point. Most of the fucks that work in Redmond, those lazy fucks, especially the sociopathic fucks, they're not at work until 9, maybe 10. And then they start getting drunk at work around 4 or 5. And so that's that situation. But my ride home has been a mess. And so I've been experimenting. So instead of taking the 545 all the way to Chinatown, I'm actually just taking it to like Montlake, or taking the 542 or the 541 to Shelby, and then taking the 48 across town. And that has actually improved my commute greatly. It's actually been a real plus. I'll take the 545 to the 48, and then I'll get off around Cherry Street and grab some beer, and then take the 3 or the 4 home if I need to grab some beer. And yeah, I know it's not great. I'm sorry. I'm not a perfect person. Sometimes me and Leviathan hang out and we go to Shakey's instead of going to church. I've talked about Shakey's in the past, I think on another podcast. But when I was a kid, blah, 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 me and my brothers and sisters, when we were in high school, instead of going to Catholic church on Sunday, we'd tell our dad we went to church and we'd go to Shakey's. Anyways, I'm taking this new route. This new route's great. But like I said, I'll get off at Cherry Street, and there's a gas station at Cherry Street. And there's a man there by the name of Andrew. And I'm calling him out primarily for two reasons. One, he's homeless. Two, he seems like a decent guy, and he seems believable, which means that with respect to Andrew, I showed him my smile. You know what I said earlier about I hide my smile lest it be stolen? Well, with respect to Andrew, I showed him my smile, and we talked, and he told me something that was horrible. Andrew, well, here's the deal. When you go to this store, when you get off the 48 at Cherry and you go to the store, he'll sometimes be there and he'll open the door for you and he'll be really polite. And he doesn't expect you to give him money. Although, to be blunt, he is there to, you know, get a few bucks if he can. And here's the deal. Homeless people gotta eat. And he didn't strike me as being someone who's going and buying beer. He simply tried to survive. If I'm to believe Andrew's story, he says he's dying of cancer. I believe him. He says he just got out of jail after 15 years. I believe him. He looked about my age. And so, you know, there but for the grace of God. So I gave him some money the other day. And I started to, and what I did also is I started talking to him. And he told me that one day, he told me about people that he runs into. And he told me one day there was some dude, he opened a door for him and the dude spit on him. Now, I'm not going to tell you what Andrew said after that because, you know, he basically went into his way of dealing with it. And his way of dealing with it was the right way. He basically told the guy, you know, hey, you never know. You never know. You never know who you're spitting on. But here's the deal, folks. There's a real fucked up, upside down, sideways attitude amongst the well-coiffed, hipster, skinny jean fucktards who stare at their phones all day. And maybe they take the bus from Maple Leaf or Belltown or fucking Magnolia or Ballard or some other nice little neighborhood, maybe Ravenna, and they take the fucking bus to go to work each day, and they fucking mock homeless people, and they think that homeless people cause the problems. All these problems we're seeing, homeless people, they're the cause. Folks, homeless people are a fucking symptom, and if you're too fucking stupid to realize that, you need to fucking grow up. But I will let you on a little secret. And this thing, whoever spit on Andrew, whoever thought it was funny to spit on, folks, here's the deal. I don't care if you're one of these stupid-ass, home flipper, jackass, quasi-middle class, I voted for Trump or I voted for Hillary assholes. I don't care if you're one of these war party, lefto, quasi-gender intersectional fucks who loves to make fun of homeless people because you've decided that homeless people are the people everybody can fucking beat up on. If you spit on a homeless person, and I'm a Christian saying this, so I my greatest sin is judgment, but I'm going to say this, and the Lord in heaven can rebuke me for this. The Lord in heaven can punish me for this. But if you spit on a homeless person, you're a pretty despicable piece of shit. You're a fucking piece of shit. I don't care if you like homeless people or not, but if that homeless person's doing nothing to you but opening the fucking door so you can walk into a fucking building, you're a piece of shit. And here's the deal, folks. If you know why sometimes I beat up on Seattle so much, it's because there are so many pieces of shit with that fucking attitude. Sure, they don't always spit on the homeless people. Not in the literal sense. But they do support policies that basically turn homeless people into outsiders who drop off the radar. And the ones that aren't the drug addicts and the crazy people and the criminals, the ones who actually are just people who fell off the radar, guess what? Your fucking attitude makes sure that they sink deeper. I'm not telling you you have to give money to a panhandler. I don't always give money to a panhandler. I'm not telling you you should be okay with some dumbass homeless person who poops in the streets. I'm not happy with that. But I am telling you this. If you spit on a homeless person, then I really do think there might be a special place in hell reserved for you. Ugh. I have one more topic before I close out this podcast. One more, dude. One more topic. This thought occurred to me. I've spoken about this issue before. I've spoken about the ironically named devices. Yeah, the ironically named devices. The smart devices, the smartphones, the tablets. I call them ironically named because they're called smart, but I think they're making people stupid. But this thought occurred to me on the metro the other day that, you know, if you want to know what people worship, if you want to know what a people, what a human culture worships, ask yourself where they focus most of their attention all day. And to me, when I look around the bus now, I see a lot of people worshiping a little monolith in their hand. It's really funny. It kind of reminds me of 2001. I've said this before. A bunch of fucking apes gormlessly staring at a black rectangle. And how is that fucking different from the metro? I mean, I could fade. In fact, if I still had a YouTube channel and I was chased off of YouTube and DTube and all the tubes, because guess what? Most of the tubes are broken. But if I still had a tube channel on one of the tubes, I think I'd do a video where I faded out of 2001, the beginning, with the apes sort of, you know, gormlessly dancing about and staring and frigidity and blah, blah, blah with the fucking monoliths and then going crazy and killing each other. I'd probably fade from that to the fucking metro. Because that's exactly what I see. I see these fucking apes, these quasi-humans, staring at the fucking phone. And I know I'm listening to music and I'm reading the news. Really? Are you doing those things? I see you guys responding to shit. I see you typing shit. I'm checking my text messages. I'm checking my email. Yeah, I think you're worshiping a false god. That's what I think. I think that whatever you're giving your attention to, whatever gets most of your attention, and I got to tell you, a lot of these folks almost look like they're praying. They're in a state of prayer sometimes. It looks like they're in a state of prayer. Whatever you're praying to most of the day is what you worship. Anyways, to those of you out in the outer realms, the outer quasi zones, to those of you who are wondering about the things that go bump in the night, for those of you who travel beyond the fields of awareness to the broken valleys of consternation, I say goodbye to you. I say goodbye to you and all the bullshit. I say goodbye to you and the the disgusting film of feces and cum and blood that covers 12th Avenue. And have a great day at work.